This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Many Americans live on the outskirts of hope. Our task is to help replace their despair with opportunity. And this administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America.
In January of 1964, President Lyndon Johnson called on Congress to pass the first anti-poverty legislation since the Depression. Now, as Congress debates the future of welfare, PBS begins a new series that examines the war on poverty, the series of initiatives launched by Johnson with the intention of ending poverty. Clearly, Johnson's program failed to eradicate poverty, but what it succeeded in doing is still hotly contested. Some say the war on poverty helped create poverty by funding programs that just kept poor people dependent on them. Others say the war on poverty succeeded on a small level, it just didn't go far enough. The PBS series begins tonight. The executive producer is Henry Hampton, who also created the series The Great Depression and Eyes on the Prize, a history of the civil rights movement. Hampton says that in 1964, Johnson was ready to take on the issue of poverty, and the American public was ready too.
It was in the midst of the early 60s. America was at a moment when it seemed wise and possible to take on a poverty that was really hidden in the country. As we got more affluent, there was a tendency for people to lose sight of what was terrible poverty in the South, in Appalachia, and in rural areas. And by terrible, I mean not enough to eat. Even before you get to the larger questions of education, of jobs, just people would go hungry. And the discovery of poverty, when John F. Kennedy was running and came across pockets of poverty in West Virginia, Michael Harrington's book was a major impact. And poverty kind of got discovered again, even after Kennedy's death. Johnson decided to put it back on the top of the agenda, which he did with his Great Society speech.
Why did you want to do a series about the war on poverty?
I truly believe that the growing disparity between affluence and poverty are one of the riskiest paths the nation can take. And if it's not dealt with in some positive way, that we are really putting our entire national future at risk, because people simply cannot continue to be peaceful, to continue to accept third-level opportunities when all around them, both directly in their lives and by television, the wealth and affluence and the success of the larger society continues to pound at them about their own inability to have a piece of the American promise.
In your companion book to your PBS series, you explain that your interest in poverty isn't from having grown up poor, that in fact you came from what you describe as a privileged background. Your father was a surgeon and doctor. Who were his patients?
Patients were largely people who were either native to St. Louis or the people who had moved in to St. Louis during the 40s and 50s. And I got to know them because of working in the office and doing certain kinds of jobs for my father. It was also a time when I think the class issues weren't as separating as they may have been in later years.
How would your father handle it if a patient of his was poor and couldn't afford the doctor bill?
Well, nobody, I think, ever went away without treatment. But he was what I thought was quirky at first, but I've come to understand it over the years, that he would insist on some form of payment, either work or service or token payment. And he later talked about it. He just said that it changes your relationship to someone when you give them something. When you exchange on a border or a country, contract basis that allows both parties a certain dignity. And I came to believe that, in fact, it's an important issue when you're dealing with people who have less than you.
You write in your book that your father's response to racism was to be smart, to be prosperous, to be confident, but you came to see your father's response to racism wasn't feasible for many people. What was behind that realization?
Well, the ability to overcome racism and poverty and poor education is a very difficult hurdle, and I think there are some people who simply get energized by the challenge, and he was such a man. But there are literally thousands of people who were, I think, ready to take on these issues with their own initiative and their own capacity. You really can't judge someone because they didn't, but for those that did, they have, in fact, made enormous accomplishments and contributions. It's part of what you learn about yourself and your ability to move forward and to make accomplishment. One of the great flaws of the war on poverty was it set itself up to clear poverty away in a 10-year period. Any rational person looking at that would have said, well, maybe that's a bit optimistic. But America was in that situation. The president was anxious to go because he knew the window would close quickly. Even without the war, he believed the window would close quickly. And that the reality is that if the poverty program had been set up with maybe a set of achievements over a period of 25, 30 years, reaching goals as resources and talents became available, that it would not perhaps have been considered such a failure because it didn't get rid of all the poverty in the 10-year period.
Henry Hampton is the executive producer of America's War on Poverty, which begins tonight on PBS and continues through Wednesday evening. We'll hear from series consultant Nicholas Lemon after this break. This is Fresh Air. Nicholas Lemon was a consultant to the PBS series America's War on Poverty, which begins tonight and examines Lyndon Johnson's anti-poverty programs. Lemon writes about the urban poor and social policy for The Atlantic magazine, and he's the author of The Promised Land, a book about the great black migration from the South to the North. I asked Lemon if he thinks it's relevant now to re-examine the war on poverty.
Yes, it is relevant because you know, I grew up in the South, and what impressed me was that Reconstruction lasted roughly a decade, and then in response to the alleged misdeeds of Reconstruction, all the Jim Crow laws were put in place, and they lasted for 80 years. Some of that process has happened around the war on poverty. It's amazing for a small and short-lived federal program how much kind of psychological life there is in the war on poverty. You find it just talked about constantly, and it's been talked about a lot by Speaker Gingrich since the election, including in his sort of inaugural address. In other words, this series is helpful just at the first pass for clearing the air. There's a feeling out there that the war on poverty was an immense program, a government effort on a sort of World War II scale, that it consisted primarily of giving people money, welfare payments, and that it failed completely and so massively that it actually created the ghetto poverty we see today rather than solving it. And point by point, that's just all not true. But it has amazing staying power as political mythology. So my first hope for this series is that it'll just kind of establish a truth baseline so that we can say this is what the war on poverty actually consisted of and what the actual result of it was.
Well, if that was the political mythology, let's get to what you think the reality was. What was the purpose of the war on poverty?
The war on poverty was planned in a moment of tremendous optimism in 1964. And the idea was, it was planned by people who had, you know, served in World War II. Wars were things that America won. the civil rights movement victory in the South was in sight. And these people's attitude was this. Poverty in America just simply should not exist. We as a country can, you know, eliminate, can and should eliminate poverty. So that was the first point. It was just planned in an atmosphere of complete optimism about the ability of government to solve problems that, that no longer exists. Second point is all the planners of the war on poverty, both out of sincere conviction and for political reasons, were into, to use Gingrich language, the opportunity idea. In other words, they did not define poverty as a lack of money. They saw an America where anybody could make it if they were given an opportunity. So the ground rule handed down by President Johnson at the outset of the war on poverty was, you can't send anybody a check in this thing. No welfare. He hated welfare and wanted to eliminate welfare like all presidents. The idea was that you would give people a chance and then they would, you know, get ahead. They would pull themselves up by their bootstraps if given a chance. That was the concept of the war on poverty. And that's why the word, I mean, one of the ironies of the reaction against the war on poverty is Gingrich has, you know, market tested the word opportunity and found it tests very well, and so he uses it constantly. Well, the same was true in 1964, and that's why the War on Poverty Agency was called the Office of Economic Opportunity. They wanted to give it that same spin of an agency that would help people make it on their own rather than a welfare agency, which it wasn't.
So you have Head Start as one of those programs. What are some of the other programs that were created as part of
Poverty? 10 programs. Head Start and Job Corps. Remember Nancy Reagan's favorite program, Foster Grandparents? That was one of the 10 original programs. Neighborhood Youth Corps was another one. The biggest and most controversial program, and the one that is depicted most often in the series, is Community Action. I think you can generalize by saying out of the 10 programs, 8 or 9 were reasonably non-controversial kind of mom and apple pie things that have stayed around ever since then, not under the name War on Poverty, such as Head Start. And one, Community Action, was extremely controversial and was involved in battles from the very beginning and was eliminated after only a few years because of its political unpopularity.
What do you consider to be some of the greatest achievements and failures of the War on Poverty?
The War on Poverty was never that big. The total number of billions involved was a fairly tiny program. I think the biggest it ever got was $3 or $4 billion a year out of the whole federal budget. One thing you can say about it is it just didn't do that much one way or the other. Its failures were minor, and its successes were minor in the larger scheme of things. It's insane to say, if you look at a blighted inner city area today, you're seeing the results of the war on poverty. I would say the biggest success of the war on poverty is just putting the issue on the map. The issue, and it's still on the map. America had no consciousness of poverty and no sense that it was even an issue. There was no government poverty line that people were below. It just wasn't on the radar screen of America. And the war on poverty made the issue enduringly visible. And I would say that was its greatest accomplishment. Program by program, there have been, you know, careful reviews and evaluations that have shown that some of these programs have made a difference in the lives of the people being helped, particularly Head Start and Job Corps. The other thing that I would say is a major positive outcome of the war on poverty is, and it's something that isn't talked about that much, a common complaint about the war on poverty, for example, voiced often by President Reagan, was that it really only helped welfare bureaucrats. It didn't help the poor. It did help welfare bureaucrats a lot. That's true. But a lot of those welfare bureaucrats were people who were themselves poor. So the one of the really good stories, particularly in race relations in America of the last generation, which is the growth of the black middle class, the war on poverty played an important part of that. You over and over meet people who will tell you some life story like, I was poor, and the first white-collar job I got was as a Head Start teacher or something else involved with the war on poverty. And then, you know, people go on from there to get another job and they remain middle class. So it was through the people it hired, it performed a function similar to, you know, the police force for Irish Americans in the 1870s of just helping get a lot of blacks into the middle class. And that's an enduring legacy. Also, finally, a lot of the community action agencies that started have stayed alive, even though the Federal Community Action Program is dead. So it spurred a lot of hundreds of good local organizations doing various things around the country.
What about some of the failures?
The main negative effect of the war on poverty, and it's not really the war on poverty's fault, is that, you know, if you're going to have a community action program whose premise is giving grants to hundreds or even thousands of new local community groups around the country, it's going to generate horror stories. I mean, they're going to be horror stories. Somebody's going to screw up. Somebody's going to steal money. Somebody's going to do something bad. It's precisely because it was a bottom-up and not a top-down program. It couldn't be tightly controlled. So out of the scattered anecdotal failures of the community action program grew this tremendous mythology about the massive failure of the federal welfare state. And then that mythology is what drives American politics today. It's amazing how powerful it is.
Do you think that the nature of poverty is fundamentally different today than it was in the 60s when Johnson was president?
Yes. What's changed, I mean, there's a change that you can, it just pops right out at you in the numbers. And that is that poor people in America are more likely to live among other poor people than they were when Johnson declared war on poverty. That's the biggest change. Concentration of poverty. You now have much more than then all poor neighborhoods, and most poor people now live in all poor neighborhoods and live in isolation from the rest of society. That's the big dramatic change. Most of these neighborhoods are in cities.
Now, what does that mean in terms of federal policy about poor people?
Well, there's a tremendous argument about that. I mean, I suppose the good news is poor people are sort of easier to get to if you want to, intervene and solve the problem, because poor people are much more concentrated in these urban, all poor, usually all minority neighborhoods. The problems of these neighborhoods are greater than, you know, the problems that existed at the start of the war on poverty. In other words, there was a tremendous amount at the time of kind of West Side Story-like hand-wringing about juvenile delinquency. Well, these people just had no idea compared to today. I mean, what was considered shocking was, you know, kids having knife fights on Saturday night. The level of violence in poor neighborhoods is just beyond what anyone could have imagined then. So this is a tremendous debate in the field, but I think that because poverty is so concentrated in neighborhoods, and because remember that a whole lot of people have moved out of poverty. I mean, that should be a kind of research base for us, is the millions of people who moved out of poverty since Johnson declared war on poverty. The rate of exit from poverty during the war on poverty period was actually quite high compared to other times in American history. What do we learn by looking at these people? One thing we learn is that they don't stay around in the poor neighborhood after they get some money. So it seems to me that the general approach should be to help poor people find out what it is that will equip poor people to get out of the poor neighborhood, which has really deteriorated so much in its social fabric, and do that rather than try to turn the poor neighborhood into a blue-collar neighborhood, which is extremely hard to do.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Nicholas Lemon was a consultant to the PBS series America's War on Poverty, which premieres tonight. He's also the author of The Promised Land, a study of the Great Black Migration from the South to the North. A TV documentary series based on Lemon's book will be shown on the Discovery Channel in mid-February. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.